It is a Thursday. That means it's time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the email machine, the Twitter account, the multitude of ways we have to communicate with each other nowadays. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Sure appreciate that. 414-1234 is the local number if you want to join the conversation. It's 800-926-8809. If long distance between you and us, and Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. If Twitter is your preferred means of communication, and it seems to be such a thing nowadays, it's at WFSU Perspective. And that is singular, because we're such a singular show. You know, it seems like no matter what great social problem we may think of, you guys know this, one of the stock responses is, in the richest country in the world, we ought to be able to whatever the thing is that we want to fix, right? Well, when it comes to the problem of hunger or food insecurity, if you want to use the current phrase, that well-worn response actually has some relevance and applicability, because the U.S. produces far more food than it consumes. We do export food all over the world, and a surprising amount of the food never makes it to market. And those facts are partially what underlies a program called Farmers Feeding Florida, and that's what we're going to be talking about this morning here on Perspectives. So let's meet the panel, all right? An old pal of ours, Rick Miner, Executive Director, America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend. He has pulled himself out of the back room and the coolers and everything else, and has come on over to update us on this situation. Good to see you, Rick.
It's good to be here, Tom. Thanks for having us.
From downtown, Robin Safley, Executive Director of Feeding Florida now, and you are also involved in things like school lunch and breakfast programs and all that kind of thing, too.
I was when I worked for Commissioner Putnam, and now, you know, I'm totally focused on the Food Bank Network and the Farmers Feeding Florida program. So
you have seen it from all angles
right? I have.
Well, it would not be appropriate to talk about this unless we had someone who really gets into the ground where all of this takes place, and we're so happy he can join us by phone. It's Jay Johnson with JGL Produce. Jay, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate that, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and again, off air, you told us a little bit about JGL Produce and what that entails, but go ahead and share that with our listeners if you would.
JGL is sales, marketing, distribution for five growers. Some of the growers, you know, are small growers. They produce 5 or 10 acres, and then the larger growers produce upwards of 600, 700, 800 acres, depending on the season. I'm third generation. We're based out of Pompano Beach, Florida, but we have operations in Immokalee and then also in Western North Carolina during the summer. So we've worked with mostly family farms over the last, you know, I've been doing it for 15 years, but my family's kind of seen the surplus and how much is produced, how much goes to waste, and we're glad that Farmers Feeding Florida is so efficient in getting this into the right people's hands, and that is those people are the hungry people and children. So,
well, while we're with you here, Jay, quantify that if you could, just on average, ballpark it if you would, the amount of produce that farmers grow and the amount that otherwise would go to waste if you didn't have some other place to send it or put it.
Just in the Florida, just thinking off the top of my head the last three seasons, I would say a minimum of 40,000 pounds per week from, like, we're down here November through May. So you figure in those months, almost every week, there's definitely a load of product that I'm able to donate from our operations, from our growers' farms. And it's, you know, it's perfectly edible. It's good food. It's just there's a few different reasons why it happens. And at least we've got a system in place to get it into people's hands quickly so that they're able to not let it go to waste.
Well, that is. Let's get a little. And I'm seeing Rick Miner here going 40,000 pounds. Holy gosh! This is that really comes in handy for Second Harvest to the Big Bend to have the availability of even just from those limited number of growers. Rick, you got all that fresh produce that's available for you.
It really does. I mean, in the Big Bend, we've got about 107,000 people that are food insecure. We feed about 55,000 people a month, but the need is twice that amount. And so working with Jay and others, I mean, it's really important for us to be able to take in that produce and then distribute that to people in need.
Let's talk about the bigger picture, if you could, then, Ram Safley, because you've got the statewide perspective on this as well as the regional and the local thing. Food insecurity. How big a problem is it for the state of Florida?
Well, for the state of Florida, it's about 3.2 million individuals, and about 700,000 of those, or a million of those, are children, and 700,000 of those are seniors. So it really is a big issue for us. And the Farmers Feeding Florida program and Jay and the other growers that we work with is just phenomenal. And our studies indicate, we've done some analysis on the yields of produce in Florida. And the latest research indicates that about 20% of all produce grown doesn't make it into the supply chain based on a couple of reasons. One, either it's cosmetically blemished and doesn't meet certain standards, but is perfectly edible. It's just not very cosmetic. And the other is sometimes markets shift, right? And so all of a sudden, it's not cost effective to pull that product out of the ground because there's no home for it in the retail market. And so that's really us becoming part of that supply chain. Our estimates show that there's probably between 700 million and 900 million pounds of produce throughout the growing season in Florida, which is, like Commissioner Putnam always says, it marries the school. It's about 10 months out of the year. We're very lucky, and we're very, abundant. So it's really trying to figure out how to capture that and then working with Rick and the supply chain, making sure it gets down to the community level in a quantity that a family can consume in a timely manner.
Jay, let's talk about that impact on the farmers. If you have 20% of, on average, the output that otherwise would go to waste, you are essentially what, creating a market for that other 20%? That's got to be good.
I didn't create the market. I guess Farmers Feeding Florida did. I kind of stumbled upon a representative, and it's either that or let it go to the cows or the pig farm or whatever. So it's farming in Florida, because of import pressure and everything else, economics is a low margin business. I mean, the statistics about growers, there's no young farmers coming into the business anymore. So everyone's kind of holding on for dear life as far as, in our industry, as far as trying to make it and keep their business, thriving. I wouldn't even say thriving, just in business. But there's nothing wrong with trying to help people, children and senior citizens that are hungry. I mean, the growers work real hard. I mean, you've heard it a million times. They work real hard all the time, 7 days a week. And it irks them to see it go to waste.
Sure. And this is not the growers have to donate this, right, Robin? They actually are getting compensated for
it. Well, so what we do is there is some federal tax deductions that can be taken. And the legislature is, in their wisdom, have always funded us. We have an increased funding right now that is being poised in the House and the Senate. We're very excited about. And so what we do with that money is we help defray the pick and pack cost, right? The hard cost around getting that product out of the field. And then the farmer can take an underlying tax deduction on the remaining amount. So it's not big money. I think we still get donated product also, so it's a blended rate. But on average, it's about 8 cents a pound, which is phenomenal. And we hope that we help those growers, because they're taking the risk all year long when they plant and they water and they grow it. I hope that resource that we can give them can also help keep maybe their workers in the field longer, so that they can kind of carry it on to the next season when something else is growing. So it's a definitely an economic, initiative too, that helps, hopefully, in that way.
And for Second Harvest of Big Bend Brick Miner, that is, you could not get that commercially. I know that because of the volume that you guys deal in, you can get some good price breaks, but that sounds like one heck of a deal, 8 cents a pound.
It is. It is. I mean, with Farmers Feeding Florida, since fiscal year 2013, Second Harvest of Big Bend alone has received about 2 million pounds of produce. Under that program alone. And I mean, it's the whole gamut. It's melons, green beans, cucumbers, sweet potatoes. We just recently got in about 50,000 pounds of cabbage. And this is good product. I mean, these are fresh, nutritious fruits and vegetables that we're able to distribute to our 130 partners throughout the Big Bend. These are community centers, churches, shelters, nonprofits. They in turn serve that directly to people in need.
And I think you got, a couple of mobile pantries that are hitting the road here going into this Easter weekend, right?
Exactly. We've got one Saturday at 8:30 a.m. at Lake Jackson, UMC.
And down on the coast, I think you got one too. Because you picked up a local bank or whatever is helping you out with
this? Yes, we're very proud to partner with Centennial Bank, who's going to be having a actually today they're having a mobile pantry in Franklin County.
We wanted to give a plug there because if any organization, and I'm thinking particularly perhaps of one of the major, should we say, corporate beneficent sources here in the area, which is the lobbyists in town. We may not have too many corporate headquarters in Tallahassee, but my gosh, we have some fairly well-heeled advocates if the latest numbers we get from the state or anything, and you guys are looking for something to get behind, this might be something worthy of your consideration to maybe sponsor a mobile pantry or Robin Safley to help you guys out, because even though there are appropriations from government levels, I'm sure that there's also some private donation needs that could be met there too, right?
Absolutely. You always like to diversify your portfolio so you're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Yeah, I really, really like that. Hey, we are talking about food insecurity and a new program called Farmers Feeding Florida here on Perspectives. We would love to hear from you at 414-1234. It's long distance 800-926-8809 and perspectives at WFSU.org, the email. We shall be right back. Are back on Perspectives, and glad you are too. And you can always find this show online at WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and up will pop Perspectives and Capital Report and all that other stuff. We archive past shows, try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. And back talking food insecurity and the Farmers Feeding Florida program. Jay Johnson with JGL Produce with us on the phone. And Jay is representing five farmers in the region when it comes to the marketing and outreach and all that kind of thing. What is it like to have bring in the harvest, the crop is there, and you realize that 20% of it is not going to go to market. It is going to, I don't know, lie fallow in the field and rot, or going to go to livestock feed or something else. That's got to be heartbreaking for farmers that are just operating on a bare bones margin, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's sometimes you're frustrated, angry. Sometimes you're just kind of like, you just takes a toll out of you. You know, we have a one location and where we do a lot of packing. And when people come, if it's family or friends, they come to visit, the first thing they focus on is our cull tank, where our conveyor belt goes up and drops all the grain outs. And for years, they're fascinated. They don't even want to look at the rest of the packing operation. You know, you'll have 40 or 50 people there sorting product and packaging it, and that's what catches everyone's eye. So it really, when you see it in person, it really does kind of stick with you. You know, I guess I'm kind of numb to it, but we've built up a good system. I mean, we have now where if we're repacking something or grading product out to make it, you know, perfectly blemish free for the other customers, we'll put that product in, you know, use containers and try to offer it out to Farmers Feeding Florida. So we've kind of built up, now that we know we have their support, we've built up, you know, we've kind of changed our business a little bit to not let that go to waste completely.
Boy, that's terrific. And then, Robin Safley, when you have the availability of that, though, since time is of the essence, we are talking about perishable produce here. How do you get that to where you guys need it to be?
Well, I have an incredible individual on my staff named Sherry Atwell. So, and she's coordinating that all the time, you know, working with the what's really become cool is, I think over the last year, instead of it being like a last minute thought, like Jay is alluding to, we are really now supply chain partners with JGL. So, you know, growers are very sophisticated and our ag community is very giving, and they know, they can anticipate when that bubble is going to happen. So Jay really knows, like, next week I'm going to have a truck. So it's not as rushed as it once was. And then we then work with our food banks to get that placed. And then we send trucks into his establishment and pick it up and bring it to where it needs to be. So the money that we get from the legislature, all of that is turned back around into the community. We don't really, you know, we take a little bit off the top just for administrative, for, you know, doing some of the back room, you know, the accounting and that type of thing. But all of it is pushed out into the community to the growers in a, we call it a pick and pack out fee. So, you know, so we have this steady stream, and that's our goal, is to become a very viable supply chain partner so that we're really part of their business model.
Now, if you are able to get more of a participation statewide, what does that look like, say, 5-10 years?
Well, you know, I get real excited about this because, you know, Commissioner Putnam really is passionate about taking Florida's bounty and abundance, and he, obviously being from the ag community, saw that there was ample. And how do we connect that into the schools and into the hands of those who need it? So, you know, when you look at food insecurity, that can be daunting. You know, for every dollar invested in the Farmers Feeding Florida program, we can source about 10 pounds of produce. And 10 pounds of produce equals 40 servings of fruits and vegetables. So in order to feed every food insecure person a serving of fruit and vegetable a day for a year, I need to source 104 million pounds of food. And so then what we now need to do is just break it down. You know, and that would cost us about $10 million. So in the scheme of things, that seems like a lot of money. But when you look at the money that we put toward other programs, this is like a win-win to me. It's a dollar invested. It gets fresh produce. But when you look at the number one contributor to health care and chronic disease, it all begins with food and nutrition. So to me, this dollar invested is not only helping the ag community and helping solve hunger with fresh produce, but it's also going to ultimately invest and bend that cost care curve on health care.
Because you're talking 10 cents a pound, essentially.
10 cents a pound.
That's crazy.
It's wonderful, and it's beautiful product. I mean, Jay, I'm not sure what you've got growing now, but, you know, Florida just, we have 300 commodities that your mother would love you to eat. And we grow practically year-round. So it's really lighting that up. So supply is never going to be the issue. What we're really focused on at from the statewide perspective right now is really looking at the supply chain. Because, again, you know, getting it into the food bank is one thing, but the food bank then needs to get it into the community in a, you know, a size that is appropriate for a family, so it doesn't go to waste there. So you really have to thread that and look at sort of that supply chain all the way to the local level. So I think there's going to be some capacity building issues with refrigeration and that type of thing.
Well, yeah, and volunteers, I'm thinking, Rick, because you always have folks that come in, you know, pack things on weekends and all that. You're going to have to get a much larger army out there.
We do. I mean, last fiscal year, we had 13,000 volunteer hours at Second Harvest. And I often tell them, I said, if it were not for volunteers, we would be a big warehouse with food in it, but we wouldn't have the means to get it out. So we rely on volunteers entirely, but you're absolutely right. I mean, we actually have a volunteer group from the Rotary Club of Tallahassee coming in on Easter weekend to pack backpack bags for school children over the rest of the school year. So it's essential for us.
But a larger share of that being perishable produce, that becomes even more of an issue then for you guys. You got to turn that and get it out fast.
It does. It does. And there's another problem which you've touched on is that a lot of the people we serve, frankly, don't have a lot of experience in preparing some of this fresh produce. You can't blame them or fault them because very often these working parents, these working poor, weren't raised in a household that was served that produce. So we actually have a nutritionist on staff and a dietitian intern that when we get a shipment of produce in, let's say sweet potatoes, our nutritionist and our dietitian will then put together some easy, simple recipes that we distribute along with that product so that when a family gets a mesh bag of sweet potatoes, they know how they can cook them easily and simply and they're still tasty.
And you're seeing that with people like, well, Maisha Mitchell and all these other guys
exactly.
who are getting out into the community, into the school districts. And let's face it, food preparation is hot stuff right now. Food Network is going berserk. They are making stars out of cooks. Who would have thought that 25 years ago, right? But kids are getting excited about even having celebrity chefs come to their schools and showing them how to prepare fresh fruits and vegetables and all that kind of thing. So is that part of it too, Robin?
Well, yeah, you know, I wear the hat when I did all the child nutrition programs that you really have to look at this as a continuum, right? All these pieces fit together to ensure that family is getting reinforced. So if you feed children through the school lunch program fresh fruits and vegetables, but they don't see it at home, you really haven't won. You really have to be there on all of these gambits. And farmers markets are a piece of this. Community gardens are a piece of this. So it's really how do we as a state of Florida comprehensively look at the food system that we're creating to ensure that all people, no matter what level they are, have the capacity and access of affordable food. And that's going to look different in different atmospheres, right? So I think – or different areas. I think it's exciting times, that's for sure. But you do have to reinforce that nutrition and that component because many people don't know what to do with the fresh produce or they're not used to it in their diet.
I got to ask you, Jay Johnson, what's the feedback that you're getting really from the participating farmers? Are they down with this whole thing?
I'm sure they are. They don't really don't want to hear that their product's going to the not going and getting full price for what they're packing. I mean, I find that most growers are angry and upset with the current conditions economically, with their business, with the industry, and we just try to keep looking forward. I mean, it's not something to be – I don't really try to have a big discussion about it, to be honest, just because it kind of hits them in the gut, you know. I mean, they got to feel good that they're helping people, but at the same time, they resent the other end, you know. Oh, your eggplant had a scar and the calyx was brown. The diameter of your cucumber was 2 3/8 inches instead of 2 1/4. We're not going to accept this. It's a joke. I mean, it really is. And they get angry about it. So I don't know.
But I would tell you that, I mean, some of the growers that we work with too, I mean, Jay, they are totally committed that if their product is not going to go to retail, that they feel really good about helping meet the needs of their community. They'd like to see it go to retail, right? Because the profit margins.
Service. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would tell you, I think they're very, very happy that they can see it go somewhere where it's going to be useful. You know, and help meet another need that the state of Florida has.
Yeah, and that might even at some point have to come from a tiered system of distribution where you have primary markets, secondary markets, that kind of thing. But yeah, I know what you're talking about, Jay. We went produce shopping just 2 nights ago at a regular commercial market, and the lady that we were beside was – I have never seen anyone go through more navel oranges in one sitting. She must have been standing there for at least 2 or 3 minutes and rejecting 90% of every orange she picked up. I'm like, lady, what are you going to do? You're going to peel it, okay? It's the orange inside you're going to eat. It's not the, you know, outside. But yeah, that's got to drive the farmers absolutely berserk because of the standards that are there right now.
Yeah, it does. squeezing every tomato on the shelf, bruising them up and putting them back on the shelf.
Yeah, exactly. And then letting the kids eat the spare grapes that fall off the counter. I mean, it just, yeah, drives you crazy. Anyhow, we were talking, and we didn't get into the specific money, and we're hoping at some point, because we know he's a busy guy there. They're working on allocations down in the Florida Senate today, but 3rd District State Senator Bill Monfort, who's very much in this. If he can't join us, what's his deal with that, guys? How is Senator Monfort plugged in?
Oh, Senator Monfort has always been a great champion. I mean, obviously, we lost him as ag chair. You know, he was that for the last 2 or 3 years. But he's now over commerce and tourism. But he's a true champion of this, and he understands it, that especially in rural Florida, and we're getting – I know Matt Glass was going to maybe also join us today, but ended up not to. But, you know, the Satsuma industry, we're really growing that in the panhandle. It was so he is a true champion of what we do. Representative Rayburn, who is from the Tampa sort of area, he has also been a great champion for us in the House and sponsoring some of our, you know, our request for legislative funding.
No, you guys aren't asking for like $589 million for this thing, right?
No, we did increase our request this year to $5 million, and we were going to put $3 million of that into the farmers feeding the actual pick and pack out, probably about 3.2. And then about 1.6 was going to go into capacity building, really to help that supply chain down to the community level. And some of that was even a piece of that 1.6 was really going to be where Rick would help buy refrigeration for some of his agencies. So it would trickle all the way down into the community. Right now, you know, it's a tough budget year, so we appreciate every ounce that we can get. We're sitting going into conference at $3 million in the House and $2 million in the Senate. We're very, very hopeful that the Senate will come closer to the $3 million, and we're very excited. That's an increase from where we are now, so we're happy that they believe in us and what we're doing. And trust us with those resources to do it well.
Given some of the discrepancies between House and Senate spending on some other levels, man, that's an eyelash apart there just about.
Yeah, I think we're looking good. So if they can just close it down, right?
Yeah, everyone wants to get out of there today. God, that would really help. I'm thinking of your distribution, Rick, because you've got places like Gulf County and Franklin and some other places that really don't have the capacity to accept that produce and keep it fresh for a longer period of time.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, the Second Harvest of Big Bend has an 11-county service area with Leon County and then in basically, you know, the rural counties outlying that, the 10 counties outside of Leon. So, and it's, you know, the capacity is a big issue. You know, in many cases of our 130 partners that we work with, many of them are churches that might have one or two volunteers in the congregation that are running their entire food program. And so, you know, they basically whatever they can get from the local community for donations to help sustain their operation is what they work with. So if we can get, you know, a refrigerator cooler that we could provide to them, that dramatically increases the capacity for them to store produce and then distribute that to people in that area.
I have to ask, too, is this a program that works in concert or in competition or whatever with things like Farm Share and all that? How does that work?
Oh, I wouldn't say in competition. I mean, FarmShare gets resources from legislature, too. It's like and when you're talking hunger or poverty, I think it's all hands on deck, right? We have different models, so therefore they kind of can coexist and really, you know, Florida's a big state. It takes different ways of approaching it. So, yeah, there's no competition, and we often speak with them about coordinating our efforts and that type of thing.
Terrific. Well, Jay Johnson, what is hot? What's coming out of the fields right about now?
Everything is starting to come on for the spring crop. There's corn. There's watermelons just starting. A few cantaloupes will trickle in like 3 weeks. There's cucumbers, bell peppers, tomatoes, squash, eggplant, green beans. I mean, the leaf items are in strong demand because California got a lot of rain, you know, a few weeks ago and hurt the crop. So, I mean, Florida's producing everything.
Boy, poor California. Yeah, they have gone from extreme drought now to extreme rain, and it looks like Florida farmers are kind of the beneficiaries of that, huh?
Yes, I think so. I don't do much with the leafy greens, but I hear demand is strong, so that's good.
What do you hear from the farmers? What else do they need besides, you know, relief when it comes to some pricing issues and all of that? It looks like maybe some of the environmental strictures that they might have been forced to deal with on the federal level might be easing up a bit. We're not really sure about that. But what do those guys and gals need, Jay?
The growers, the top three challenges are farm labor and food safety. Is a major topic. They're raising the bar. The growers are working hard to ensure that all products are safe and clean and full trace back. And then, of course, just trying to compete with the import pressures that exist. I mean, those are the top three issues for Florida growers, in my opinion.
Oh, thanks for articulating those, because I don't think anyone who has not been on a farm or knows someone who does that for a living can fully appreciate just how challenging that entire situation can be and the thin, razor-thin margins that these folks work on. When's the last time you saw a rich farmer? There are not too many of them out there, unless you're one of the big, you know, multinational ag companies or whatever. We are talking about food insecurity, though, and the Farmers Feeding Florida program, an initiative here to take some of the surplus that otherwise might go to animal feed or even be dumped aside and make good use of it for folks who could use it here. And you're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Join the conversation at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809 or zip us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. Fresh fruits and vegetables in abundance for really anyone who wants to avail themselves of it. Is that not a dream or what? Well, that is part of the overall vision of the Farmers Feeding Florida program, to take the surplus multitude that is out there, like what, one out of every five items that comes out of the fields might otherwise go to waste unless there is a distribution chain and a way to connect the people who need that food with that food that is actually coming out of the fields anyway. So we're talking to Executive Director of America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend, Rick Miner, Robin Safley, Executive Director of Feeding Florida, and with JGL Produce, Jay Johnson, who joins us by phone. As we were in the break, Rick, you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the health benefits of that more natural, more flavorful, more delicious.
Sure. Yes. Stuff. I mean, you know, hunger is very much a health issue across all demographics. You know, so we all know that, you know, children during the ages of 0 to 3 are during their most, you know, critical stages in development. And for young children that are going to school, whether it's kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, or up, I mean, if you're hungry, you're not going to be able to focus in school. And you start to fall behind your peers. And if at that young age you start to fall behind, you never really catch up. And so we're not realizing the potential in many of these kids simply because they don't have enough to eat. The health aspects are the studies are profound. I mean, you know, a child that's struggling with hunger is 31% more likely to be hospitalized, 3 times more likely to be obese. And seniors are affected as well. Seniors that are food insecure are 60% more likely to suffer from depression, and they're 53% more likely to suffer from heart attack. So it's you know, solving hunger is a very cost-effective problem to solve. I mean, not only is it the right thing to do, but also from an economic standpoint, it makes sense for us. You know, just recently I read a statistic that providing a senior with the Meals on Wheels program, for example, which we partner with Elder Care Services quite a bit, 1 year of serving a senior is about the same as 1 day's hospital stay. So the cost benefit of us just doing the right thing makes a lot of economic sense too.
You mentioned another magical word, because we talked about this on the program last week in anticipation of the Stomp Out Juvenile Obesity, they changed it from diabetes mm-hmm. to obesity, event that took place at the Tallahassee Museum this past Saturday. And when you have kids who are overweight and obese, it is not because of an overabundance of food. It is an overabundance of empty calories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can be mitigated dramatically by fresh produce.
Absolutely. And, you know, the as Rick alluded to it, the chronic disease and the things that flow from an unhealthy diet are extremely costly. And a hospital down in Fort Myers, Lee Memorial Health System, was seeing that their senior population, for example, was coming in for minor surgeries and having multiple night stays because of complications. And they were like, what's going on? They did a research, realized that the individuals were coming in malnutrition. So they started writing a prescription of food, working with our food bank down there, to give that senior, you know, 3 weeks of food prior to the surgery and then post-surgery. And they saw a 23% reduction in hospital stays. And so to me, we're starting to really capture that kind of data so that people really understand the investment and the return on investment. And it's such a like what Rick was saying, it's such an easy investment. It's just for the return that you're getting, it's like a no-brainer that this is what we should do. And I think people are realizing that. I know the healthcare communities are really understanding that. And when they do the community impact studies, they're asking questions around food insecurity and that so that we can capture more of that data.
Let me ask you, Jay Johnson, since this seems to be a trend, at least in parts of North Florida here, where we have an awful lot of small, literal mom-and-pop farming operations here, how's the trend going towards more local distribution of locally sourced food going into whether it's the farmers markets or maybe some of the even some of the bigger chains to try to use that as the cachet? Hey, this was grown right down the road. You know it's healthy because it's local. I mean, you can even meet the farmer sometimes during special promotions. Is that becoming more of a thing now in the agricultural community? Did we lose Jay, guys?
I can hear you.
There
can
you go.
Hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the local, when stores and food service distributors promote local, it really does drive sales, and it helps small growers and large growers. It helps everyone, and I feel like the consumer appreciates that. They would prefer local over something imported, and that definitely helps with, you know, sales, and it trickles down to the first person, you know, producing the item, producing the crop. So
yeah, I was just wondering because if they're, you got to keep the growers fiscally viable if you're going to have surplus to get into this program. So anything, and Rick Minor, you've been involved with a lot of buy local type activities and stuff over the years here. Is there anything more that can be done on that level to promote that? Hey, here's something that, guys, we grew right here in Leon County. Y'all got to try this. It's wonderful.
Well, you got a good memory, Tom. Back when I was chief of staff at the mayor's office, I mean, we launched Local Business Saturday. And this was, I think, 2010, 2011. And even then, we started to see an emerging public awareness of the value of buying local. But since then, I mean, it's really taken off. I mean, I think Tallahassee in particular has embraced the idea of shopping local and buying local, because when you spend that money, I remember the statistic, you know, 68 cents of every dollar you spend basically on something that's not produced locally goes out of our community. But if you buy something local, that money stays here. And so you're helping your neighbors and your friends and your family and your coworkers by buying local.
Yeah. And Robin Safley, if you can use that as a best practice, look how well it works if, you know, it gets that way in Leon County on a slightly larger scale and then go statewide with that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, when you think about local, right, for our program, there is absolutely all of our food banks have their individual relationships with their growers. And then what happens is when they exceed what they can absorb from their grower, then they toss it to us to try to help get it to another food bank so it doesn't go waste, because everybody has their capacity limits. But when you think about it, so there's local and then there's Florida local, right? We are harvesting, what is it, Jay? You probably know this better, but in the winter months, Florida is feeding the rest of the nation. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Everything else
seaboard,
is.
Yep.
So, you know, I think of it as, and that's my goal is to get more Jays, right? And especially in the panhandle where we have some of the smaller growers and that kind of thing, to get them engaged. I was just over in the Platte area the other day where they're building a co-op with all these small growers, and how can we actually help be maybe a distribution for them even in the retail? So because they're looking at cost, and they're going to need trucks for their co-op, and we're like, well, this is what our food banks do all the time. What if we have you donate on one hand, and then we're willing to distribute your product to wherever your retail market is, and then they don't have to become a logistics arm. So I think there's lots of ways we can marry all of these great things and leverage off of each other's resources, and then all the time also meeting some of the critical needs that the state of Florida has.
Yeah, the local annual tour of farms and ranches, I think, is just terrific, because how many folks have grown up and you hear about farm fresh produce. You've never been on a frickin' farm.
Yeah.
You don't even know where it comes from or how it operates. And again, you're right, Jay. What happens when people who have no background in agriculture actually get on a farm and see how it works? I bet there's a lot of jaws dropping and eyes popping, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're impressed. And everybody loves to eat, it seems like. So it's pretty cool to kind of see where it comes from and experience the, spend a day at a farm or a packing house and get to witness all the work that goes into it. So it's more than just putting a seed in the ground and throwing it in a box, and that's it, So it's a lot more complicated than that.
Well, that's something I think everyone should at least take advantage of whenever you have those programs. And I think New Leaf Market, has been doing that since forever.
Mm-hmm.
But any opportunity you have to actually meet someone who is in the agricultural business and go and take a tour and see how that works. You get a new appreciation of how this happens.
Well, and they're gamblers because, right, every year when they're putting that seed in the ground, you don't know what Mother Nature is going to throw at you. And I have to tell you, obviously I worked with Commissioner Putnam for 4.5 years and got to know the ag community and still get to work with the ag community and Commissioner Putnam from my vantage point now. And I can't tell you how kind and considerate that entire industry is. It's amazing because usually you have, everybody, lawyers, there's some good ones and some bad ones, but the ag guys, there's just a heart. And I don't know if it's because they're working with the ground and they're working on something that is so fundamental to our process, or that they're used to the ups and downs throughout life, and they just kind of have learned to run, ride with it. But truly, salt of the earth. And how lucky we are to be in a state that has the agriculture community that we have, and their giving heart, and their best practices. I mean, we're just truly blessed.
Mm-hmm. And as Jay can attest, putting up with all kinds of other challenges and yet having the wherewithal to get up every day and say, okay, we're going to make this work somehow. We may not know exactly here at 6 a.m. how this is going to play out, but we're sure going to give it our best shot. And to stay in the business, that's what surprises me, Jay, why there are not more farmers that just did not totally wash their hands of that, let the fields go fallow and take off and start making some real money somewhere.
Yeah, they really love it. It's something that they're carrying on a tradition for their families. It means a lot to them, and they can't get enough of it. They'll work 7 days a week, 14 hours a day. It's amazing. And their optimism is something else too. You get stuff thrown in your face constantly, week after week, and you're like, no thanks, I'm done. And these guys just keep pushing through, so it's pretty, I don't know if I can do it. I've never grown a crop before, but I've been in plenty of fields, and every time I leave, I I think about, I don't know if I could do this.
Well, good thing they did. Otherwise, we'd be a lot hungrier than we already are. Yeah, and we would not have that 20% surplus coming out of the fields and farms that could go to places like yours, Rick Miner, to help out with the folks who just otherwise do not have the availability. Because we forget, too, for many people, hopping in the car and buzzing down to the full-service grocery store is not an option most of the time.
Well, you know, this is every now and then I'll be at Second Harvest and something really hits me about how real this is. Just recently, I got a phone call from someone who's calling into us. It was a woman in her late 50s. I could hear the tension in her voice, and she had said that her father was disabled and lived with them and required constant care. And her husband just recently got injured and is in the hospital for a long-term stay. And she's very embarrassed. She said, I've never done this before, but I'm calling you to ask you for food. And I said, ma'am, please don't be embarrassed. This is what we're here for. And I gave her the information for some of the partners that we work with that were very close to her. And as I started to put the phone up and hang up, I said, you know, God bless, ma'am, take care. And as I started to put the receiver down, I could hear her start to cry. So this is real. These are people that are really, truly dealing with tough situations. And for many of us, you know, but for the grace of God, go we. Were not for one circumstance that might befall us, we would be in the same situation as this woman and her family. So that's why, I mean, Jay, I really want to thank you and the growers you represent and Robin with the Farmers Feeding Florida program and all the growers that help us with this, because not only are we reducing waste, but we are truly solving and are serving a need out there that is out there hiding in plain sight.
One of the stories, since you were talking about that, Rick, that really struck me after meeting some of these guys, in Wakulla and Franklin County, the old fisher folk who used to be able to feed themselves and their families from the sea, how that situation has changed and how it breaks their hearts to their way of thinking, be forced to accept charity from an organization like Second Harvest of the Big Bend. And if it were not for their family, those guys would probably opt to starve to death.
Yep. And I think that is, you know, a lot of people are it's a misconception of who we serve. Many, many of them are working families. You know, it's that working poor. Have you seen the Alice report that was done by the United Way of Florida? I think that really demonstrates that individual that we and the system are helping. And many of them, especially in rural Florida, you know, they're of that, well, I'm going to just, you know, buckle up and I can handle this. And you know, life is a struggle, and it's really nice to be there, and it's rewarding, right?
It is.
And like you said, Jay, life is changing even for our farm families and what they have to deal with, whether it's international competition or, you know, government regulations or oh my gosh, lack of help on the farm. I can't imagine being in a field and picking tomatoes all day. Mm-hmm. Or any other thing. That is just beyond my ability to even comprehend. And yet there are folks who do that day in and day out.
And they're wonderful.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Yep. Well, okay, we are talking in just the few moments that we have left here. How do we piggyback on this, develop the partnerships, the interstitial tissue, if you will, to bring all this stuff together so it becomes even more effective than it is now? What's next?
Well, I mean, my personal thing is, I do think, you know, money is not always the answer, but in this instance, it really can be the next, because we've got the supply, we understand how to get it into the community. It really is capacity building. So it's ramping up on the dollars that we have to get the product out of the field, and it's ramping up on refrigeration and that type of thing to get into the community. And so, you know, again, I think it's solvable. It's just going to take some resources. And, you know, it's the best investment. For a dollar, you know, 10 pounds of food, 40 servings is a really good return on investment. You can feel good about that. And wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I know Rick, you know, in our community, Second Harvest of the Big Bend is just phenomenal. And it's sort of they're the silent hero. You know, they're the backbone that is sort of behind the scenes. And I'm just, you know, first of all, I've been from this community, born and raised, and I'm just so proud of what Rick's doing and what Jim Courteau did to really turn that around. And I think we're moving in that right direction. But I would really encourage our listeners to give financial support to Second Harvest. It's money well spent. It goes right to the service of that community. And I think that we're going to be going forward in a dynamic way.
Robin Safley, Executive Director of Feeding Florida. Rick Miner, top guy at America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend. Of course, Jay Johnson with JGL Produce. Thank you for coming on and talking about farmers feeding Florida, guys. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Mr. Evans back there doing the button pushing today, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Hey, when you say immigration reform, that may not seem to have much to do with our part of the world here in North Florida and South Georgia, but there are ramifications for us all. We'll talk about it next week right here on Perspectives, and have a great holiday weekend.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.